My name's Paul Bestall. This is Mysteries and Monsters on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Welcome to the 50th episode of Mysteries and Monsters. This week, we welcome back Brendan Storr and Ian Gibbs, otherwise known as the Ghost Story Guys. We talk about the continuing success of the Ghost Story Guys podcast, famous haunted hoaxes, Dybbuk boxes, haunted dolls, and much, much more. So last week, we also asked people to get in touch about their favourite episodes, and two shows clearly went down well. Episode 31 with Linda Godfrey, and episode 40 with the Australian author, Tony Healy. Hopefully, both will be rejoining us over the summer, so please keep your eyes peeled for those. Once again, thank you for the continued growth and support the show is receiving. Make sure you keep giving us nice reviews on your podcast app to help the show reach more people. Don't forget you can find us on Facebook as Mysteries and Monsters, we're on Instagram and Twitter as Mystery Monsters, and please subscribe to our channel on YouTube. Right, let's welcome back the Ghost Story Guys. Well, here we are on episode 50, and who better to help me celebrate this milestone than two of my favourite podcasters and human beings, Ian Gibbs and Brendan Storr, the Ghost Story Guys. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul. We are happy to have our triumphant return here to Mysteries and Monsters. We were guests on episode three, I think it was.
Yeah, I've just been checking. Weirdly, and obviously we'd just arranged this, I hadn't planned it. We did the episode a year ago today.
No way.
If you just check your Skype messages, it was January the 26th, and I've only just noticed that when I was just checking you to ring.
That's amazing.
That is crazy. What are the odds?
Yeah.
Well, 100%, I guess, because it happened, but, you know.
Yeah, absolutely no idea, because I've not spoken to you on Skype. We've obviously messaged a lot over the last 12 months, but... And through Facebook and things, Brian. But to just open it up and then just click it said you spoke almost a year ago, and I thought, oh, that's a bit odd. Pressed it and it was there.
Wow,
unbelievable!
There you go.
Well,
and what a year it's been.
Yes.
Nope. Well, I was just thinking that. I mean, we had a chat off air before we got started here, and there was again a sort of fascinating similarities and synchronicities between our three lived experiences. You and Ian more than myself, but there's still this interesting connection in our personal backgrounds.
Yeah, it's quite peculiar because obviously I was very fortunate to have David Weatherly back on the show the other week.
And that was a great show.
And we were talking about haunted dolls. And obviously there was a bit where we were talking about the infamous Robert the doll in Florida. And obviously we were talking about it and we were discussing the situation and I made a little faux pas because I didn't finish off what I was saying. And David's like, ooh, you've got to be careful what you're saying about Robert. So I, you know, offered a humble apology and defended him and said, I thought he was quite an interesting character. And since then, now, maybe I'm just reading too much into it. I'm not one for this kind of situation, but the 3 weeks, maybe is it 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks since? My world's just turned upside down in a fabulous way. So,
oh, excellent. Huh.
Who knows?
Yay, Robert.
Go, Robert. Yeah. As someone who's become over the course of the 3 years we've done Ghost Story Guys, I've become very superstitious. And I'm always very cautious, when we've done episodes about, we've stopped doing episodes about the good folk.
Yes.
But, I've become very, very, very aware of these things and maybe a little bit paranoid, but, yeah, I think it's always good to acknowledge these things and not try and bother anyone.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got to send him a gift now as recompense, I believe.
He's got a great scam set up.
Well, he has. I mean, that was one of the amusing things about that, was to discover that people send him spliffs through the post, which I found just amazing. I mean,
well, Florida.
Hang on. So how can I get this set up? Asking for a friend.
I have a haunted doll that only eats money.
Yeah. That's right.
There you go.
Or spliffs. That's fine. You know.
Well, that's one way to connect with your third eye, I suppose. So yeah, as you were saying, it's been 12 months, and yeah, it's you guys have just gone on from strength to strength. You know, as I referred to at the beginning, and you know, I'm not blowing smoke anywhere, chaps. It's one of the highlights of my week. There are four shows I listen to every week, or every fortnight in your case, and I just love the way the show continues to develop and grow. Have you felt it's been a natural progression to try things differently and mix it up a bit? Or did you feel a little putting pressure on yourself to kind of push yourself to do something different?
I think a combination of the both, actually.
Yeah, like I think we're both really aware of what the show is and what kind of what we want to accomplish. And I think there's been a lot of evolution, you know, like kind of hearing the show and thinking, just seeing little weak spots and then trying to correct it. Like one of the things we've added, which I'm really fond of, is the page turning sounds between stories.
Mm.
You know, and sometimes these things just sort of fall into place and you think, oh yeah, that's what's missing.
And then something else like more philosophical, we decided we just didn't want to be negative. We didn't want to tear anybody else down or anything like that, and instead look for ways to help each other out. And that in a way has been fundamental in shaping kind of the direction the show's gone.
I think because obviously early on in the show, if anyone, you know, if anyone listening has listened to us since the beginning, we were pretty critical of
everything.
Of everything, and particularly a certain paranormal show host. And
I shall just interject there. Obviously, as we were discussing about my daughter, during the conversation, she was telling me how much she absolutely adores that said gentleman and his particular show.
Oh, no. Well, nice to meet you, honey. And cut her loose.
So, yeah. But, hey, once again, a strange synchronicity.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's worked out really well for us. You know, like I think it feels better because we decided we want the show to be a place where people feel comfortable belonging.
And safe.
And safe, you know, like we love telling scary stories and we're never going to softball something. And if I think something's BS, then I'll say something's BS. But, you know, we've had these great messages from people of all walks of life saying, you know, I hear things you're saying and I appreciate that, you know, like, I think on the Amityville episode, when we broke down, when we broke down the legend of Amityville, which is invention. It's invented.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. You know that. I don't have to tell you that, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, like that's very much where this, say Indian built on an Indian burial ground trope comes from.
Mm.
And it's nonsense. It's nonsense. And there's nothing in the historical record to back that up. And so we've made an effort to say, and also, you know, like just because this, even if it was there, it doesn't mean immediately horror movie, you know, it's
right.
Anyways, just sort of pivoting to not being, not being negative, I think has been really valuable for us on the show. And I think personally too.
Yeah.
I think it just allows us to approach the show with like a real sense of enthusiasm. And I mean, well, I'll still say awful stuff. I mean, I'm a degenerate. First and foremost.
Oh, but... and I'm dark. I mean, that's just no good.
I acquiesce to your points of view. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. So I think that's been good for us. And I think the other thing that's been really good for us is Ian and I are always kind of exploring our relationship.
Yeah.
You know, and like one thing we've discovered is there are ways to improve our connection on the show. You know, like we
can't see each other anymore when we do the show.
Yeah, that's it. We're
so what was happening was we were both, when the other person was reading a story, we'd pull out our phones and we'd be, checking our feeds and that kind of thing. Mm. And then one day Brennan said, do you think we need to see each other? And it suddenly popped into my head and I'm like, No, but I think we need to put the phones down. I think we need not just down. We need to put them where we can't pick them up.
Yeah.
And so even though we can't see each other because of the wind boom screen.
The reflection filter.
Yeah, that we use. Now that we've gotten the phones out of there, what a difference.
Oh, huge.
We feel it and you can hear it. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it just makes you a bit more reactive and you're able to bounce a bit more.
Yeah, you're more present, right?
You're more
present than trying to, respond to a text message and,
Yeah, or checking Twitter or maybe looking at pictures of scantily dressed ladies in certain cases.
Yeah.
Ian.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Monster.
Hashtag boobs.
You understand. You understand. But, yeah. But all in all, it's been good for us. I mean, we're closing in on, actually, we haven't really talked about this on our show, but we're closing in on 1 million downloads.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, sure, we have about 83 episodes out right now, if you include the bonus episode.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, it's been pretty cool. Like obviously we're still a tiny show in the grand scheme of things, but I just think that's an indication that our per episode average has crept up and up and up. Mm. You know, we're starting to be approached now by networks and advertisers, and
we laugh at them. How dare you try and monetize our brilliant art?
I've got my book royalties to fall back on.
That's right. Literally tens of dollars. Literally tens. But yeah, so long story short, I think, yeah, we've sort of, we've always tried to be aware of where changes need to be made, but we've also just sort of allowed the flow of the show to dictate where we go and kind of what we want out of, like what we personally want out of it. You know, not just necessarily what the audience wants, but what we want out of it.
And I think it helps to knowing each other's weak spots. Like when we have an advertiser come forward or something of that nature, I literally know nothing. Like, I don't know what's reasonable. I don't know how it works. And Brennan does. And in the same way, sometimes we'll have a specifically plaintive email and Brennan's like, I got it. Don't worry about it. So... And we respect each other's opinions on that kind of thing. So there's a safety there between us. And I think that often translates into the show as well, as we both respect each other for what each other can do and what we can't do.
Yeah. Yeah. Knowing what I can't do has been wonderful. Because the other thing is too, like that I've really, something I've really, really loved about, especially this last year, and I'm looking forward to doing it more, is just really trying to build community, Like coming on your show is great, and we're going to have you on our show doing like as a guest storyteller. You know, we've had Kevin from We Need to Talk About Ghosts on our show, and Kevin's doing some music for us now. We've actually just been contacted by a synthwave artist offering his music as a musical guest, and just doing these things like the musical guests and reaching out to other shows, and it's been cool because we get to meet people and kind of that, your points of view kind of help inform where we go and what we do, and just. I don't know. It's nice not to feel isolated.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do seem to have a very, obviously as someone that's been there since the very beginning, and I'm not saying that as some kind of, give me a special badge of honor, but obviously when I'd heard you, Brennan, when you were on Into the Fray and then kind of followed you along the path, I think it is remarkable, really, that there's a lot of love in the fan base out there, and that's quite obvious in some of the... in the openness of some of the correspondence you guys get and the fact that they feel so comfortable in being able to reveal what in normal conversation would be classed as extremely weird things to want to talk about.
100%. And that's always been, I mean, that was my motivation for writing a book about ghosts and hauntings anyway, was because those books, when I was a teenager, were the only thing that let me know I wasn't crazy, I wasn't, experiencing something completely unique. Other people have experienced these kinds of things. And I think in a way the podcast has done that for a lot of people. And a lot of the emails we get say, I've never told anyone this, or no one outside my family knows this story. But they feel comfortable telling us because, we've made it really clear what our position is, that what you experience is what you experience, and we're not going to judge that. And I just think, especially if you're in a position where you're experiencing something and your parents or your partner is like, no, you're not. They can come to us and we're going to say that, that sounds awful, or, what are you going to do kind of thing, rather than just dismiss it out of hand.
And we've been lucky enough too now to meet some people where, you know, if you're having an ongoing problem, we're not equipped to solve it.
No.
He and I are not those kind. Like, we're not going to come to your house and roll some chicken bones and be like, you know, demons be gone.
Actually, if you provide us with chicken, we might show up.
There
is that angle.
We're not going to get rid of any ghosts.
No.
We will get rid of any excess chicken wings you may have.
Absolutely.
But we've been lucky enough now to connect with someone who is equipped to handle that. And in certain cases, we will connect him to, you know, when someone gets a hold of us and says this or that, we'll be able to connect him to them. And he is much more, you know, he grew up with people who are equipped. And, you know, he's a shaman, basically, and he's equipped to handle this stuff. And so we're comfortable saying to someone, hey, well, go talk to Michael, and, you know, he will be able to point you in the right direction. And just being able to provide, like, some kind of help, because where the hell else do you go for that? There's nowhere you can call. Like, literally, you know, Ghostbusters is not a thing. You can't open up the Yellow Pages and look for haints. You know, like, who will purge haints from your house?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just another way to try and connect with people. And I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of this comes from the fact that we both spent years working in a room by ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I think we're very, very eager to try and, yeah, just make a, you know, like a real connection with the world. And people have been pretty respectful. You know, we get the odd person who's maybe a little bit, I don't even know.
Opinionated around a certain topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. We'll say that. Like, I approached you one day because someone had called us a particular name and I didn't understand what that name meant. And
yeah.
And you explained it. And I thought, that doesn't make any sense.
No,
really.
No. But that's the funny part. We've been accused of being too politically correct.
Yeah.
And then we've been accused of not being politically correct enough.
Oh, yeah.
And we've been accused of hating religion, hating the military.
Yep.
Loving religion too much. So, you know, what are you going to do?
That's really? It. We just kind of keep on.
And that's kind of what we say to each other. It's like, huh, okay, well, that's great. Thank you for your opinion. And we're just going to keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I think doing something like this has made me less opinionated.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I agree.
And like you touched on earlier about trying to be more positive and deal with things. I found that a lot intrinsically is a lot of the issues with social media, that it is so relentlessly negative in a lot of aspects.
Oh,
And judgment.
Yeah.
Negativity and judgment are the two hallmarks of social media.
You know, anything can get jumped on and blown out of all proportion across anything. And 100%. I just find it extremely wearisome and very tiring to deal with that kind of environment. So I tend to, like you touched on, I'm trying to be more positive and open-minded about things that, you know, 12 months ago, if you'd had a private conversation with me, I would have given you matter of fact, my personal opinion, until you liked it.
Yeah. Right. Well, and what you said about on social media, that is specifically why we have not set up like Facebook groups and chat rooms and things
for us.
Because we knew it was going to require monitoring and policing in a way. I don't know what other word I can use. And we just didn't want to get into that.
No, we had some requests and continue to have some requests for like a GSG Facebook group. And we've resisted. We've just set up, and actually we'll be announcing on episode 77 that we have a subreddit now. So, you know, that's one place people can go to chat and talk about episodes. We'll be posting episodes there just because, I mean, and obviously Reddit can descend into that kind of sort of snake bit whole thing, too. But I feel like Facebook is so particularly that thing.
Yeah.
It just you end up with people who sort of feel like they have some kind of authority in the area or in the group, and then they kind of gatekeep a little bit, and then it just becomes a whole thing, and we just don't have any interest in that. And but the subreddit thing is, you know, hopefully one, it's outside the Facebook ecosystem, because I'm not a fan of Facebook in any way. And
it's a necessary evil.
Yes, absolutely.
That's it. But if I can avoid that ecosystem as much as possible, then I will.
Yeah. Very much so. I mean, it is. And like you say, especially because of the subject matters we deal in, I mean, I've had some very eye-opening correspondence.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
But, and the hardest thing is to just delete it.
Yeah.
Yes. But I'm very good at that now. I just go wherever.
Yep.
And I handle those for us.
Well, you handle pretty much all the
emails. Well, Brennan's just, he wants to make it right. Like, he either wants to fix it or express his opinion. And I'm like, no. Yeah. That's like explaining algebra to a cat. There's really no point. They're not going to get it. And you're just wasting your energy. So, you know, I thank them for their opinion and I thank them for their contribution and I wish them well on their road of life. And then I release them back into the universe.
That's right.
And hit the delete button.
Oh, there was one guy recently, man alive. Oh. It was a Facebook message.
I tried to cut you off.
I tried to get in there and jump off on that. I just couldn't let it go. He accused me of saying something, which I had not said. And I just couldn't leave it. And I'm a weak man, Paul, sometimes.
Yes.
I'm a weak man. I'm handsome and I'm potent and virile, but shut up, Gibbs. Let me have this.
Okay.
But I sometimes just like certain things, if people put words in my mouth.
And so, of course, the man's reaction to that was, fuck you, I know what I heard, kind of thing. And I'm like, Brennan, just no.
And then blocked me before I could respond.
Yeah, of course, which we all knew was going to happen.
Yeah.
Because what I'd said back to him was, oh, well, thank you for pointing that out. That's great. Have a great day. And that was it. And he didn't respond to that.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, right? You give people something to respond to.
Yeah.
Or you don't.
Fuel them.
Exactly.
I'd also like to point out that I told you before the show, we can't swear on the show.
Sorry.
And last time I was the one.
I know, it's sworn twice. I'm sorry.
Was it twice? I only heard it once.
No, it's been twice.
Oh, Gibbs.
We're talking about angry people emailing us.
Yeah, that's right. You're off the case. Hand in your badge and gun.
Yeah, Cagney and Lacey, the crack ears. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, but you see it all the time. Like we were saying, about, you know, any subject, and as you mentioned when you were on about, you know, covering certain topics on the show, and Amityville came up, and I always go when I hear that, and it's like the Winchester House, you know. I was watching a program the other day that was made last year, and it was still perpetuating this trying to get away from ghosts nonsense, and I just thought, how well known now should this story be? Because it's been absolutely dismantled from top to bottom, that urban myth.
Yeah, and I mean, even the movie Winchester,
the
same thing. They made it all about ghosts attacking her, and oh, lordy.
Well, an example that really gets my goat is the Dybbuk box.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, when we launched the Ghost Story Guys book club, which we'll be relaunching in March, that was the first book I picked because I wanted to show that this thing is nonsense. And it's just no one cared, you know, like they love the story of the Dybbuk box. But if you read Jason Haxton's book, The Dybbuk Box, he gets the original person who sold it to admit he made the whole thing up.
But that's not what people want to hear.
No, that's it.
No.
And it just, it was, sometimes I think, man, that's, that drives me nuts.
Yeah, it was interesting because, like I say, sorry to mention David Weatherly again, but we went in.
No, David's great.
There's a story in his Haunted Dolls book, which is essentially that someone created a fake backstory about a doll and sold it on eBay for a $1,500.
Right.
And it was all nonsense.
But, really, you say?
another business haunted plan there. It's all around haunted dolls are the go-to thing now, it seems.
I'm going to pick up a case of Cabbage Patch Kids on my way home.
If you buy those, they're going to be suspicious. That's like the third one for this month.
this doll is now, is apparently haunted, and the man that originally said it wasn't isn't so sure anymore. And you just think, well, who is telling the truth here now? Is it the belief that they want it to be true powering it, or is it simply that it's just nonsense?
Well, there was an experiment with that where they made up, I'm trying to remember what it was. They made up a ghost. And it was a science experiment. There were controls in place.
But
it was made up completely, 100% completely made up. Mm. Yet when they sent a group of people in there, they began experiencing things. And so the question was, did they manifest something?
Mm.
Like, was the power of belief so strong that it sort of summoned energy? Mm. Or were people just thinking they were experiencing something because they expected to? So it's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say that is one of the things that sort of, I think, haunts me, and no pun intended, on this topic, because I struggle very much. The concept of death terrifies me. Mm. And I struggle with the notion of life after death, because it sometimes seems to me to be too good to be true. And when I hear people who have these invented experiences, I find myself thinking, well, man, so is all of this stuff simply a projection and an invention, you know? But then you'll hear about an experience that has no precedent and is shared by multiple people in this location who have no concept of it. And then you think, okay, well, maybe there is more to this, you know? But it's very much one of those things that I go back and forth on in the wee hours. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, was it the Philip experiment? I think that when they tried to conjure him up, I'm trying to think the name.
That is what it was. I think that is, yeah, they called him Philip, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure, were they in Canada as well? Were the Canadian psychologists or parapsychologists that did it?
You know what? It's sketchy in my brain.
Yeah, I saw something the other day about it. That's why it's a little fresh in my mind.
Yeah, I think it was. I think they were in Montreal.
Mm. That kind of leads into the whole belief of tulpas. And is it possible that for a lot of people, and I suppose slightly touching on the poltergeist phenomenon, often it's always kind of misreported that there's always like a focal point. Is it a adolescent teenager or a sorrowful situation or a tragic death that creates a kind of energy that allows people to tap into it and see it? Or is it the actual thought of what should be there, creating, like you say, a projection of what is expected?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the poltergeist cases that really fascinate me are the ones from sort of the early half of the 20th century when you were dealing with occultists.
Yeah.
And I know in Dionne Fortune, in one of her books, she talks about making a mistake while summoning an air elemental.
Mm.
And
I hate it when I do that.
I know, every time.
Really puts a downer on a Sunday.
Well, you got to stop farting during the rituals.
I'm lighting them.
Yeah. Hey, well, yeah, that really stops. Jeez. But no, I think that kind of interests me, because I think that steps a little bit outside of sort of, the what we expect versus what happens. Because and especially the presence of that actually always twigged me when I would read about poltergeist phenomenon that happens in the presence of UFOs.
Mm.
You know, like a lot of the when you read about the Point Pleasant stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there would be these sort of poltergeist phenomenon in the days after that. And so I do wonder if there is sort of like a natural element to that. But I do think I don't know if expectation plays a part in that. I mean, I do think people can play a part in that. Like, I think I have a friend who's – I think I've told the story on the show before, but I have a friend who, when he's going through stress, his wife can tell, because when he's asleep, the closet door vibrates.
Mm. Wow. That's wild.
And so I've heard similar things. So I do think there is an element of like, control that we don't understand.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think that it's all of that
kinetic or whatever.
Yeah, like I think it's kind of like, you know, like there's a difference between I won't use that example because we're on the radio, but we'll say between like electricity and lightning.
Mm.
Like, they're fundamentally, it's a similar force, but they're being enacted in different ways.
Mm.
You know, but to say that, oh, this is lightning and lightning is this, it's not the same.
No.
You know, so I think that I kind of wonder if, like, you're tapping into the same kind of energy source, but it's not you the whole time.
Right.
You know, it's you tapping into it sometimes, and then other times it's whatever is out there, like this air elemental that, you know, Ian farted into existence. Things like this.
Yeah. Well, that's the downside of being addicted to Red Lobster, I suggest.
There you go. Those biscuits we get every time. garlic butter.
Oh, I miss garlic butter so much.
Have you ever been to Red Lobster?
I have, actually. When I was there in Florida, I went to one in Florida.
And did it Did it just thrill you no end? Or...
I was just stunned that I could get a three-course meal for $15, which at the time time was equivalent to £7 in the UK.
I know. In the same way, I was stunned when I was in the UK and I bought fish and chips for five people, and it was the equivalent of $125.
Oh, yeah. I remember taking...
Broke my heart.
When I met Nick for the first time, I took her for dinner at TGI Fridays in Bristol.
Oh, perfect.
And I mean, you know, TGI Fridays. I paid almost $200 for that meal.
Yeah.
And it, TGI Fridays is not a $200 meal place.
A little chef.
Oh, I will say, on the subject of Red Lobster, my very first time, I was road tripping by myself somewhere, and they had endless shrimp on.
Yes.
And I ate an obscene amount of shrimp.
That is like a holy high day for my people.
I believe it. Yeah. I believe it.
Yeah.
But I remember I had a beer with my meal, and then it was quite a large beer, too. And the waitress came over and said, oh, would you like another beer? And I said, oh, I'm driving. She's like, yeah. Okay. Your customs are different from mine.
Yes.
You still know.
You live your lives differently. I remember living in Winnipeg, and it was my birthday, and we were very poor, and we'd actually given up groceries so we could go to Red Lobster for my birthday.
Oh, wow.
And it was endless buckets of crab legs.
Oh, wow.
Which I don't think they do anymore.
No, I can't,
for obvious reasons.
Would.
And I hadn't eaten all day, and I got through seven buckets
of
crab
you.
Legs. Just me. And I said to the waitress, feeling pretty good. I'm like, all right, that's it for me. But that's pretty good, eh? And she looked at me and she kind of shook her head. And I'm like, no. And she's like, I've seen better. Wow. And I'm like, really? What's the most you've seen? She goes, we had a man in here the other night. He ate 13 buckets of crab legs.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, yeah, no, that's never going to be
no.
me.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah. I once went on a, strangely, talking about weird eating feats. I know we've gone on a tangent here. But I once went out with a team from work about 10 years ago. We went to a Pizza Hut.
Right.
And I think they were doing something like £5 in the afternoon, all you can eat.
Yes,
And I had about four slices of pizza.
Yeah.
And there was a guy who went with us, who will remain nameless. And he ate 21 slices of pizza, and he wasn't a big man. He was quite a slim chap.
It's wow. Those are the guys you got to watch out for. I lost a donut eating contest once to this little tiny guy. Those are the ones you need to watch out for.
They're like stealth bombers.
They really are. Yeah. No.
Yeah. He certainly got his value for money. I'll say that.
No kidding.
Man, I'll say. One last on this subject. When this kind of stuff goes wrong. Back there used to be this bar in Vancouver over on the mainland that for 5 minutes after the Canucks scored, you could buy a pint of beer for a dollar. And so that night I drank 13 pints of beer.
What?
Yeah.
No.
And I remember very little, but I remember we went to another bar afterwards and I was conscious-ish.
Mm.
And there was a guy playing guitar in this other bar, and in my head, I got this idea that it would be hilarious if I tackled him.
Oh, my God.
And thankfully, my friends had not had 13 pints of beer, and they said, hey, big guy, why don't we go somewhere else?
Yeah.
And
that's the one good thing about drunk people. They do stupid things, but oftentimes you can convince them to go a different route.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I found that too in Ghost Walks.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this, yeah, I don't drink the way I used to. I backed off.
I think it's probably the closest many of us will come to is a near death experience in regards to when you're that drunk, you're kind of floating. You're not really. It's an out of body experience. There's just like flashes.
Yeah, and I, you know what, I the same thing. I haven't had that much to drink in years.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I had a story once. A guy, a friend of the family, was telling me I can't remember where he was. I think he was out with some friends, or no, he was having someone had died. They're having like a wake, and he went on a bender, like two or three days of booze and drugs.
Two or three days.
Yeah. Wow. It was a bender. And he woke up and he thought, man, I actually feel really good. He said, I thought, because the party was now over, and he thought, man, I thought I'd be hungover. He got up, he went over to the window, he looked out the window, and he thought, oh, I feel great. And then he turned around and he was still lying on the couch.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And all of a sudden, snap, he woke back up on the couch, felt like hammered hell.
Wow. I wonder how close he came to actually dying.
I do wonder.
Yeah. I'm not going to go back.
No. Or it'd be like that story on Mysterious Universe where the guy was in a really bad car wreck, and he could see from in the astral plane that he was all messed up, but he became aware of all these multiple realities. And in one of the multiple realities, he actually wasn't that badly messed up, so he tried to get back into that body, and it didn't work.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
Stealing corpses.
Not a good plan.
No.
No.
Paul, I feel for your listeners. This is a wild ride.
Hey. Hop on
guys
board.
Got guys like David on here, and I'm a huge fan of David Weatherly. I really am. Like, his books were some of the first ones I read when I got into the paranormal.
Yeah.
And I he's one of the few researchers, because I don't have the depth of knowledge you do, but he's one of the few researchers I've heard who I really believe he knows his stuff, and he's not just stringing things together.
Yeah. Interviewing David's like the best exam you could ever have, because you've got to be on your game.
Yeah. I bet.
Unlike talking to us.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, strangely, yeah. I was gonna say. I mean, that's the other aspect of this is that I was counting up the other day. Last year, I bought 113 books.
Wow!
And I've read every single one of them.
Wow!
And were two of those books ours?
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
Okay. That was the right answer.
I actually reread both of yours over Christmas.
Oh, wow. Cool!
Because I like. Yeah. I always keep a little pile. I'm sure most bibliophiles do. They keep a little pile of books by their bed, because I'm actually just rereading Mysterious America by Lauren Coleman, which is a wonderful book.
Nice.
I managed to pick up an original print from 1983 about £5, so nothing.
Very cool.
And just reading that and these stories from the early 80s and how cryptozoology was back then, it's fascinating once again, because I've not read it for about 10 years.
Right.
But it's just been brilliant.
I'm trying to get back into it this year. Last year last year was very stressful for a lot of reasons. this year I'm trying to get back into the paranormal, like learning about it and reading about it. And the sad thing I've discovered is that some of it is really, really bad. there's a book I'm reading right now, and I'm not going to out the author or the title, but it's a subject I'm very, very interested in. And I'd made a comment on the show about how there had been no substantive writing on this subject in about 10 years. And someone contacted us and said, "Oh no, this person has written several books on it. You should read them." So I bought one on Kindle. And I prefer reading hard copy books, but
God, no trees died for this one.
Yeah, amen to that. but I always have my phone, so I thought, well, you know, put some books on there so I can read it. Anyways, oh my God, it's. I mean, I know I said, you know, we're trying to remain positive, but this is a very, very. There's some pretty wild speculation in this book that has absolutely, I don't think, any basis in fact. And it's just, it makes me think, but this is like someone was comfortable enough to put this out into the world and say, oh no, I believe this. I'm putting my stamp on this.
And not well written.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's that too.
Yeah. It reminds me of a book I got, a few years ago. Cause one of the main reasons I bought a Kindle was that it was so hard to get hold of. Linda Godfrey, for a prime example, it was really hard about 10 years ago to get anything that she'd written in the UK. You were always getting it from the States. So the main reason I got a Kindle was to get hold of paranormal books from North America, because it was just the easiest way to do it, because they were all electronically available. Right. And I picked up, thankfully, I can't remember the title, because you used to get one free book a month, or you'd get like a special offer, like a book of the day for £1 or something.
Oh, yeah.
And it always like recommended. And I got this book about a cryptozoology book. And in the first 20 pages, they'd seen a giant snake, a giant monster, Bigfoot, a pterodactyl, a UFO, a ghost, and a poltergeist. And I just went, this is the biggest crock of crap I've ever read. You know, I'm very open minded. I will read books about UFOs and goblins and monsters and the fae and trolls and whatever. 20 pages of that, I thought, absolute tosh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was basically like monster bingo. Shocking. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, it'd be that the type of chap, if you'd seen a dog with five legs, he'd have seen one with six that juggled fire.
Yes. You know? Absolutely.
Yeah,
two clown syndrome.
Yeah.
You saw a clown, you saw two clowns.
Yeah,
exactly. So in regards to the other aspect, I think, of the show that you've really begun to develop is having a theme more collectively, you're sort of looking at certain areas or aspects of the paranormal more. Do you think that's something that's given you a bit more something to get your teeth into, to for both of you, both on a personal level and as well as producing the content?
Yeah, and it's been really good to do that. And first of all, it helps focus everyone who does research for us, like Luke and Anthony, and that's been really good. And the other side we noticed was there is a sad neglecting of ghost stories from other countries. Yeah. And that was really in our forefront. We talked about this back in the fall of last year, that this is the year we want to make sure we do more international content. And the funny side of that is we will often get our international podcast ratings.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And so, like, the week after we do an episode on, say, Thailand, we'll be, like, the number four ghost podcast in Thailand. And then the following week, we're not on the chart anymore. So I didn't even think of that. But no, it's been really good. And I think it does also promote the kinds of things we're saying all along, which is we're all in this together. Mm. You know, you don't have to be middle America to have experienced these sorts of ghost stories. Mm. They are international. They are worldwide.
Yeah.
And whether you're in Africa or Asia or wherever, it doesn't matter. What continent you're on, you're going to have experienced something to do with the paranormal, or at least heard about it. And that's been really cool for us.
And I think the other thing that having like a topic has forced us to do, and I think it's forced us into these other places, you know, because we'll come up with a list of ideas. And we try to have a couple months in advance set out. We don't right now, but we try to have some stuff lined up. And but it'll come from a random thing. Like the year before last, I was in Vancouver for a concert, and I saw all these taxis driving past, and I thought, geez, I wonder, haunted taxis. And so we got the guys looking. But what we realized is most of those stories came from India and Singapore. So we almost kind of like stumbled into it by accident, but we discovered that we really enjoy that because there's such a different flavor to stories that come from those places, you know? Yeah. Like we actually finally did a full-on Haunting of India episode. And that came from what started as a haunted train show. And we found that so many of these haunted train stories were coming from India. So we sort of pivoted and started looking. And sure enough, yeah, I mean, India, we could do multiple shows on the Haunting of India.
And that's a good example aspects, because you find with like North American ghost stories, people hear things or see things and it's spooky. While in places like India and even in Asia as well, the Philippines especially, they take it very seriously. Like these things can hurt you or to harm you in some way, and you need to treat them with great respect. And you need to keep them as far away from you as possible.
Yeah, well, I think it's like it's a part of the natural world, you know.
Exactly.
So like a bear in your backyard. Don't go out and stick your fingers up his nose, you know, because he looks cute, and you should be fine, you know. And I think when you start, because obviously we use the paranormal as entertainment, so we're not innocent in all this. But I think the danger that comes with using the paranormal as entertainment is it robs it of some of its actual power.
Yeah.
In terms of like what it means to you. So people will go, oh, I'm going to go into this haunted building and, you know, challenge the demons to a fist fight.
Yeah, maybe no.
Yeah. Don't do that. This is a bad, Ghost Story Guy's official tip. Don't do that. But yeah, so I think having that respect for it as a natural world, because again, to go back to Dionne Fortune, she described the occult as being like an ocean. It's neither good or bad in and of itself, but it is very powerful. And if you jump out of a boat in the middle of the sea, it doesn't matter whether you know how to swim or not. You're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
And so we try to approach it that way. And sometimes, honestly, Ian's really good at he's got a very developed sense of this stuff. And he's very good at staying safe. I can be a little bit dumb sometimes. And I find myself drawn to places and I just think, oh, I'll just go here. And I'm drawn here. Well, yeah, I'm drawn there because I discovered later when Ian points it out or one of my friends points it out, no, that place has got a lot of mojo going on. You really shouldn't have gone there by yourself. You know, I was out for a drive last week, and I just had this crazy, oh, I should go out to Langford, which is a suburb north of Victoria. And well, about 11 o'clock, I'm out in Langford with my friend, and we're both getting increasingly edgy, and then we hit a point where you can't help but feel something's wrong. Mm. And both of us that night had intruder nightmares in our separate homes.
Yeah.
And I haven't had that happen in a long time, but we both had these terrible dreams, and I think what happened is something latched on.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, it's good to be respectful, but sometimes I can be dumb about that.
Well, but I think that's too – I mean, I've had to deal with this stuff since I was – for as long as I can remember.
Like, right.
As a very, very little kid, I've had to learn to shield myself. And you haven't. You didn't really have that awareness until
– No, that's
not true. Even, what, 20 years ago, 15 years ago?
Oh, nutty. I would say really my awareness started when I started the book in 2012.
Oh, well.
Like that's
– Lordy.
Yeah. And it's really not until doing the show properly –
Yeah,
that I've really become aware. Like I'm more able to understand. Oh, this is what's going on.
Right.
Like working in that haunted office as long as I did, that really kind of drove home.
Yeah.
That something's going on. You need to be aware.
Yeah. And for me, and from no great skill of my own, it's just been second nature.
Right.
Right. So I think that's Brennan can say I'm better at it, but honestly, it's just I've been doing it longer.
I think that says for both of you there then. Brennan's awareness has increased through education, and whereas yours is all about environment, Ian.
Yeah, no, that is true. Yeah.
Go ahead.
After you.
I was going to say, I realize I grew up in that. I also grew up in that environment, like with Revelstoke, but I didn't understand.
Yeah.
And, the older I get and the more stories I hear from our listeners and from other people, I kind of realize, yeah, there's a lot of stuff I don't remember that is kind of dribbling back in. We had this wonderful story from down the States, and it sort of West Coast, but we had to keep it relatively anonymous. Mm. But her son has described a lineup of people marching down the hallway by his bedroom into a room, and they identified that room was a kind of portal. Mm. I remembered that happened to me when I was a kid. Mm. I didn't like sleeping in my room, and I remembered, I would sleep in my parents' room sometimes, and I remember seeing a lineup of strange things and people marching down the hallway towards my bedroom. But it was just kind of lost in my brain. But now that we're doing this, I realize, I was around this, but the people I grew up with had no sense of it. And it was never that, like Ian talks about seeing things and things like that. Mine usually was manifested as dreams. Mm. So I don't really have the background, but, I sort of have to imagine that spending 20-some years marinating in Revelstoke had something to do with it.
I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, like you touched on there where you were on about one of the theme episodes, the taxi episode I found fabulous because there are some aspects of the paranormal which I don't think get delved into enough. And I love stories about interactions between spirits and motor vehicles. And that episode specifically really reminded me of some of the stories that came out after the earthquake that took out the Fukushima nuclear power plant.
Yes,
and the big tsunami time, that came time. In. And there was one story that I read from a taxi, and it was really matter of a fact. It was as far as you referred to there about how in far Asia, it's the paranormal is treated far more seriously. And he had no qualms about telling this story about picking somebody up who told him to go down into Fukushima, knowing there was nothing there.
Yeah,
and he disappeared on the way. And I've touched on that. It's like when I did the episode about phantom hitchhikers. That's another aspect of the paranormal I love because there's a couple of stories in there which either the person telling the story is lying, or it happened, and you can't put it down to anything else.
Well, there was another story out of there where a woman got into a cab and said to the driver, take me to this area. And he said, why do you want to go there? There's nothing left. All the houses are gone. No one lives there anymore. And she looked at him rather shocked and said, am I a ghost? And then she disappeared.
Wow.
And some of the cab drivers, they were actually more annoyed than anything else because they had flip the switch to start the cab fare, which meant now they had to come up with that money.
Oh, no.
And it's like, well, who's going to pay? Because according to their fare, system, they had accepted a ride, and someone's going to have to cough up that cash.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Some of them actually drove all the way up there with people in the back who didn't say a
word.
Holy
smokes.
And then got there and turned around, and no one said.
Man.
Yeah.
We had some stories in, I think it was the last episode of last year before Haunted Christmas or Scary Christmas, Road Trip to Nowhere.
Yeah.
And you know, there was stories. I'm always interested in stories where experiences will cause electrical failure in cars. And we had that, at least one story of a guy who, his car just died. And what he felt was in the middle of the woods. But when he woke up in the morning in the car, no, he was in the middle of a town.
Yeah.
And
but couldn't see anything.
No. Yeah. And turned the car over and it just worked.
Yeah.
And when I was on Coast to Coast back way back, I had a guy call in. He had exactly that same experience in a small town east of Revelstoke. Mm. He's on the way into this town and the car just started fritzing. He rolled in. He couldn't find anyone. No one would open their doors. Mm. And he just passed out in his car, woke up the next morning. Everything's normal. Car turns over. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, one of the strangest aspects, there's a tiny reference to it in the Mothman Chronicles, the Mothman Prophecy, sorry, where Kiel's car breaks down and he goes to the house for assistance and the guy pulls a gun on him and calls the police. Because apparently that had happened four nights in a row. But
that's America.
But it was the first time it was actually Kiel that had turned up. But the guy, he was waiting for him because it had happened three nights in a row.
Right. Wow.
And Kiel just couldn't understand that. And the guy couldn't understand it because it all, you know, he'd got an alibi. And obviously people could vouch for the fact that he'd not been anywhere near that place. And obviously Kiel just couldn't ever explain that. But that's something similar, that it's as though someone's replayed something and then he's played it out.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ian's had to go, so the remainder of the show will be me and Brennan. So carry on, sir.
You're stuck with me, you poor buggers. Yeah, Ian has what I like to call a grown-up life. And of course, we've been in the studio recording episode 77, so he has to go and be a grown-up. But thankfully, I am here in my Peter Pan finery to carry us through.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, sure. I'll turn up at the opening of a letter if it's got my name on it.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Well, it's always nice to be nice. So thank you very much. So what else have you kind of had has anything else sort of reinvigorated your appetite towards certain aspects of the paranormal then, Brennan, since this year's carried on?
You know, I had, when we were in the old, because we used to record in an office in a haunted building. I used to work in this office and no one was ever there. So we were able to put the equipment in there. And we had a lot of experiences. I had a lot of experiences sort of in and around there and then out in the world. But what I noticed happened is we lost the office because it's the company. I was actually one of the owners of this company and the company cratered. And so consequently, I'm very broke. We also lost the studio. And once we moved out of there, we sort of started moving into this, the spaces we're in now, but they are not haunted. And, one of them was, but it's been fine since. And, I think for a long time, not being in that environment, my sensitivity dropped way down. But what I found is last year, someone very close to me got very, very sick and I started spending a lot of time over in Vancouver, in this medical hostel, because Vancouver is a very expensive city to stay, especially if you're there for 5 or 10 days at a time. So I would stay in this, you know, again, it's a medical hostel, which offers a deeply discounted rate for family of people there receiving treatment.
Yeah.
And what I found happening is I would have more and like, there was things happening in that hostel. And then I would come home and I would start having more things happen around the house. And so I think that kind of spending time over there resensitized me to it. And I've become very, very, I haven't had anything. My most dramatic encounter was, you know, seeing shadow people. I haven't had that happen in a very long time, but I have seen in the distance what I think are shadow people, you know, and stuff like this. So I think that's, again, kind of reinvigorated my interest in the paranormal and I think just doing the show every 2 weeks too, you know, it's a part of your life. So you can't get away from it. And I started realizing that I didn't have anything. And actually I was listening to your show. I was realizing that, you know, like I said, I really respect you as a researcher
Thank you. Oh no, absolutely.
realize just hearing your depth of knowledge. And I thought, well, I'm not going to have that because I don't have the interest in cryptids and things like this necessarily, but in terms of the paranormal, I realized I had kind of halted my education. And so I just thought, this seems like it's pushing me on this path to learning, get back to, you know, these things I enjoy and to, because I love the mystery of it. You know, I love like kind of unraveling mysteries. And sometimes it'll bite you in the butt. I mean, there's a subject that if you listen to your show, you'll know that I'm very, very interested in. And that's Missing 411 / these drownings of young men in America and UK. And I am deeply fascinated by the subject. But what I've discovered is the downside to that, and I'm sure you know this is a problem in the UFO community.
Yeah.
You get into researching it and you get kind of paranoid. And you start thinking like, oh, they know that I'm looking, and you think, well, who cares? Who cares, right? Like you're one idiot sitting alone on your sofa reading a book on your phone. Like, you know, the they're not coming for you. But at the same time, I think you start getting curious and you start looking at things. And I think one of the things that alienated me from the paranormal for a while is I started investigating something. It was a disappearance. And I hired remote viewers. Like, I went that far. I hired remote viewers to try and locate this person. And I kind of made some headway. But someone I trust very, very much came up to me and said, you got to stop because you have become obsessed with this thing. And what started out as kind of like originally I wasn't even trying to find this person. I was actually just testing out the abilities of the remote viewer. But they said, this thing has got its hooks in you and you are obsessed. And it feels like the kind of thing that if you're not careful, there could be some consequences. And certainly one of the things the remote viewer discovered was we'll say an illegal drug operation. Like the things they didn't understand what they were describing to me. But when they illustrated what it was they'd seen, I know just from sort of, you know, I've had some interactions with some unsavory characters in the past. I understood what I was looking at. And that kind of operation is only done by, we'll say, organized crime. And so I realized I was edging up on some stuff that over which I had very little control and very little, and even less understanding. And so that's when I backed off. And I think if I were to point to one thing that kind of put me off or alienated me from the paranormal for a while, it was realizing that I'd kind of gotten, letting it get away from me and, or had let it get away from me. And so now I'm back again, sort of learning, but, trying to keep that in mind, keep in mind that there's this possibility that you can become a little bit obsessed. And especially if you have some ability with, you know, if, like, again, I could hire the remote viewer, or I myself am pretty good at, to a certain degree, I'm actually not bad at remote viewing. And you kind of end up getting yourself in situation, or there is the potential to get yourself in situations that maybe you shouldn't be in. And so I'm trying to balance that. And I think that's sort of what's reignited my interest, is this sort of increased sensitivity and this increased awareness that I can do this as long as I'm not stupid. And once we're off the air, I can tell you about more of that. But that is very much an off the record discussion.
I mean, it is interesting. It's opened up a real thirst for me. I mean, what I thought I knew about, say, for example, Poltergeist a year ago, my understanding of the subject matter has completely undergone a massive transformation. I'm of a very different thought process on it now. It's
interesting.
It's opened my eyes to a lot of things that I've kind of fallen into that specific. I used to believe in specific tropes to be the particular focuses, and I've read enough about it now to realize that they're almost inconsequential in the scheme of the overall phenomenon. So that's really eye-opening in that aspect.
I've got a copy of a book here. I should just send it to you, because it's no good to me. I didn't like it, but it's kind of a rare book, and I think that in your hands it would have more value. I think it's a first edition of Morris Jessup's UFO and the Bible.
Okay.
And anyways, sorry, that's not really relevant to the podcast, but
no, that's okay.
Because I think to a researcher such as yourself, I think it would have more value.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you. Oh, I'll look forward to that. It's been really interesting, because I spoke to Richard Astep, we discussed the British ghost author and investigator Peter Underwood. Who is essentially the grandfather of British paranormal writing. he basically laid all the templates for ghost investigation and books for generations and decades. And he's hardly remembered these days. But all his books are about to be re-released on Kindle for the first time ever. And it's just a wonderful... I couldn't recommend it highly enough. If you've never read it, he's basically the reason why anybody from the ages of 40 upwards in the UK loves ghosts.
Interesting. I'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, he just went everywhere. He was the first guy that basically created like catalogues and guides of areas, and he'd do specific counties and towns and places, and he was the first person to really focus on specific areas and pull them all together.
And see, I love that style of research. That's the, very much the kind of research I'd love to do. And quite frankly, that's one of the reasons I haven't published a book after Strange Little Place is because to me, if I want to write on a subject, I need to be able to sort of touch it. You know, if I want to be able to go somewhere and interview people, to me, I don't enjoy the online only kind of research because I feel like you're only getting material, or quite often you have material that other people have already kind of picked over. And so and that's something I admire about David. You know, we keep bringing up David Weatherly, and I'm quite happy to, because that's something I really admire about him is he does a lot of boots on the ground research. And I just think that's the way to go. That's the stuff that really interests me because you're there.
Yeah, I think we're really smack bang in the middle of a golden age of investigatory research at the moment. We're very fortunate. We've got people like you say, David, and people like Lyle Blackburn and Linda Godfrey who are compelling and thorough investigators, and they give us a real feel for the whole phenomenon rather than just this has happened, which you can sometimes get in some reports.
Yeah, because I think that's the easiest kind of reporting to do, you know. And honestly, that's what Strange is. It's just me taking stories and kind of putting them in a slightly like in a local context. But I think it's. That's just sort of the easiest way to do it. But when you find someone who's capable of taking that and putting it in an actual context, like, as you say, like Linda and Lyle and David, and even David Pilates, I think. I mean, I haven't been as enamored with some of his more recent books, but I'm actually reading the new volume on Canada right now. But at the same time, I do think, you know, I think he's a solid researcher, and I think he, you know, when he's on his game, you know, he goes to these places and he does the boots on the ground work that's needed.
Yeah, and fair play to him. It's good to see, because I think, as with most things, I think these aspects sometimes fall out of fashion for the sensational, and certain aspects of the Fortean world tend to disappear or lose fashion due to it, I think.
Oh, sure, and I think, you know, because so much of the discourse is dictated by television. You know, so I think that people kind of they see what they see on the shows, and then they expect everything to kind of conform to that.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't tell you the number of people who will, you know, they'll bring up things to us like knocking three times to mock the Trinity. And that drives me crazy.
Yeah.
You know, because I just don't think that's a thing. I just don't.
Yeah.
You know, but regardless, yeah, it is great to see these researchers out there. And as you say, it's very much a golden age. And I hope that people appreciate the golden age of that, because even really with horror movies, you know, we're kind of in this golden age of horror movies right now. So there's this hunger. I think people want depth in the world. You know, they want to find these hidden depths, and I think that's why you're seeing these sort of this curiosity.
Yeah, it does seem quite cyclical, but I suppose you could put that to most aspects of culture anyway, really. But yeah, it's just. I think a really fascinating part we're in at the moment, and we're just getting some fantastic work across a number of fields. It's brilliant.
Absolutely.
So listen, thank you very much for staying with me for the final 10 minutes. Where can everybody keep up to date with you, follow the show and follow you guys on social media?
Sure. Yeah. Well, the podcast, The Ghost Story Guys, is released every 2 weeks. We're available everywhere podcasts live, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, all those places, Spotify. I think the only major service we're not on is Pandora yet. But yeah, you can find us there. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/ghoststoryguys, Instagram at instagram.com/theghoststoryguys. We do have a Twitter account if you want to give us a follow. It's administrated by Sarah, who's part of our team. That's twitter.com/ghoststoryguys. You can find me personally at probably Instagram.com/largelythetruth is the best place to find me. And also on Twitter at largelythetruth. And I you can reach me on there. Instagram is mostly, I do a lot of night photography, things like that. Mm-hmm. And Ian is on Instagram as Ghost Story Guy. Mm-hmm. And he has got lots of pictures of his very adorable cat.
Yes.
So you can find him there.
Randy Savage.
Yeah, exactly. You understand. And I think that's all the major places to find us.
Oh, well, brilliant. Well, listen, thank you both for coming back on to help me mark my 50th episode. It's been a real treat as always. So thank you both for your time, and continue being one of the best podcasts out there, my friend.
Hey, you too, man. You too.